This podcast is a TOEFOP production.
Head to TOEFOP.com for more.
The following episode of TOEFOP is rated MA for mature audiences. It may contain sexual references, time travel references, allegations of bin misconduct, and mild coarse language. TOEFOP advises that this episode is not suitable for anyone under the age of 15 or anyone who thinks a comedy conversation between two old mates sounds like a terrible idea for a show. Minors must be accompanied by a parent or guardian. This is John Deek speaking.
Everyone relax. This is TOEFOP. I'm Charlie Clawson.
I'm Will Anderson. Hello and thank you for watching.
I mean, occasionally, like, you know, when Mike does his... Oh, God. This show is off the rails already. We've got dogs fighting in the background. We've got Mike, who when he does his traditional introduction, he normally will say, TOEFOP, episode number, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
And he got to it and then just blanked on the number, didn't know what it was, and then said go, which ordinarily...
I said, look, I've got the two dogs back in the same area for the first time in a couple of weeks. I've literally just like got out of like an 11-hour drive and I'm just like rolling into this episode. We have a time restraint. The dogs would be really good literally up until Mike said one and then they decided to have a fight with each other.
The timing
it was, like he was counting them down.
It was impeccable. They knew. Well, let me ask you something. I don't know how clear this stream's coming through, but what do you reckon on my teeth? Do they look good? Whiter?
Yes.
Ah, good, because I've been whitening them over the last 2 weeks.
I was going to say, it'd be a weird trick question, wouldn't it? Like, that really fucked with my head at the start of the podcast. You're like, do my teeth look whiter? And I'm like, I guess I should say yes. And then you're like, well, you're a liar. You're a liar because they're not whiter. They're more yellow.
Well, no, because it's been playing tricks with my head because I've been looking at it. It's been a two-week process, 45 minutes a day, excruciating pain. Like, I had no idea it was going to hurt.
Wow, what sort of method are you using?
So have you whitened your teeth before? Do you know?
No, I should. So I have terribly yellow, like, because coffee and cigarettes. Like
coffee
like,
and cigarettes.
The worst.
Exactly. And I don't really smoke anymore, but I'm loving my coffee. And so I'm just soaking my teeth in coffee overnight just to maintain the rage. But it was my dentist who suggested it. Well, yes. Gemma kind of sort of made some kind of overture. And then I don't know. When you hear it from two people, maybe you start to think, okay, well, maybe my teeth could do a bit of a whitening. So there's two ways you can do it. One
is what I would say, though, as a white person in like the year 2022, like you really do hesitate to make yourself more white. I feel like that's just on the nose in this current day environment. Is like, you know what? I'm not happy with how white a part of my white body is. I'm going to make it even whiter.
Well, I'm actually also going to bleach my hair blonde and dye my eyes blue so I can look like the Ubermensch. Imagine that. Like if I pivoted not just like alt-right, but like hard white nationalist Nazi.
Yeah, like you literally go into a hairdresser with a picture of the Ubermensch and say, this is what I want to look like.
So it's like if you started picking up in episodes of TOEFOP, so like, you know, this week my teeth are whiter, next week I'm blonde, 3 weeks from now I've got blue contacts in, and then I start
and every week you're like introducing content because like you know that if you just went full on in with it, I would like pull it up straight away. But this would be a very subtle way of introducing how good things being whiter are, right? You're going to tell this story about your teeth. And then at the end of it, the general conclusion everyone will have is things are better if things are whiter. And you start to just introduce those themes in every week to the podcast.
Well, it was more like I was thinking, you know, that I watched that undercover documentary about that guy who infiltrated the white nationalists. And when he was doing his interview, he just said, oh, I'm just really racist. My political views are racist. Like, it's not that hard to infiltrate. So, but I think I would go a lot more subtle. But I mean, obviously, if I say something outrageous, you're going to pull me up on it. So I'm not going to do that. I'm going to sort of just slowly bring things in. Like maybe there's like, I don't know, you know, there's like Nazi bands and stuff. Like there are certain punk bands that like they have like Nazi references in their lyrics and stuff. If I start,
I mean, the easiest way to do it would be like infiltrating it through the letters or whatever. So just because I never know.
Yeah, right. I never, who's sending the letters in?
I never know who's sending them in. You do all that admin. So all you'd have to do is every like few episodes, just like have you heard of this band? Aren't these hilarious lyrics? And then yeah. Like, we would like, you would just start reading out the lyrics and we would riff on them. And then suddenly later just filtering Nazi propaganda into the show.
So do you try and like, are you like Jackie O, where you're just laughing along on air and then off air, you like, shit, man, what the fuck's going on? Or do you confront it on air? Like, just say I say something that's pretty out there. Like I say, you know, Hitler had some good ideas, something yeah. like that. That's like, not me saying that. No one take that out of context. This is me hypothesizing, if I was a white nationalist, me saying that.
Okay. I like at the start, I'd probably think it was a comedic bit, right? Yeah. I'd be like this could be it. We could be in the bit you've made me do right now. You're like, I have to approach it from a meta way or we'll all see this coming. So how can I say on the podcast, Hitler had some really good ideas. I know. We'll have a meta conversation about things you couldn't say on the podcast and then I'll say that thing and it's out there regardless. I'll get Will to repeat it. It's a fucking master plan. And speaking of master things, there's also this thing called the master race I'd love you to be interested in.
Yeah.
I think I'd pull it up. I think I'd be like, hey, man, like, that's all fun and games, but, you know, come on. Like, yes.
Hitler had terrible ideas. Let's be honest.
Here's the thing. Wouldn't matter regardless if Hitler had heaps of great ideas. Hitler probably did have some great ideas, like, you know, in other areas of his life. Mm. But we judge him on that particular idea that was like, not a good idea at all. The most evil and terrible of ideas, right? Like the extermination of an entire race of people and like, you know, wars and, you know, and like his entire narrative. Like it wouldn't matter if he nailed he could have invented the fucking iPhone. But if he also does that, it's not like you're like, oh, well, I guess it balances out. We love the iPhone. We hate the, like, do you mean? Well, like, well, what if, but what if he had some other good ideas?
But what if the payoff was balanced? Mm. So like coming up with the iPhone doesn't really balance out in the grand scheme of things. But what if he also invented like clean energy, which enabled the world to produce like ample food to stop people from starving to death? And so, yeah, like there was millions died, but then he, you know, theoretically, like do you start looking at him and going, oh, wait a minute, this is a more complicated issue.
I love that you think that people wouldn't exterminate 6 million people for the sake of keeping their iPhones. I think you're very optimistic about the human race. If you think that if the proposition was put to the 9 billion people on the planet that you can either keep your smartphones or we have to find 6 million people to kill, like people would at least go, well, who are they? Which ones? Do you mean? Yeah. Like, I think like people wouldn't immediately hand back their phones until they got further information.
Well, my slow descent into white nationalism has started with my teeth. But so the process is you get these little, like you have to get fitted for like a little, you know, like mouth guard thing, top and bottom.
Yeah.
And then once that, this little silicon mouth guard, and then once that's done, you get given these little bottles of peroxide, little droplet bottles that you put like a tiny little drop of peroxide into the guard and then you sort of affix them to your teeth. Now, yeah. I read the instructions, which are written like written by my dentist. So tailor made for like idiots like me.
Yeah.
And he said like put in 0.5 of a mil of peroxide into the mouth guard. Do you think you could eyeball half a mil and know like 0.5 of a mil and know what that looks like?
Adam Spencer rang me this week in hysterical laughter. Laughter that in 5 years of me working alongside him on Breakfast Radio, I never heard once. He never laughed that hard at anything that I said in the history of the show we did together. Then he was at the point in our most recent TOEFOP where I was trying to do the maths on how many exorcisms a year the guy would have to do. And he was in tears. Could I eyeball half a mil? Absolutely not. In no way would I have any understanding how much liquid that is.
You know what's funny about Adam calling you this week is he also called me. I don't think he felt it was enough that he had to laugh at you. He actually has the numbers of both hosts, and so I had to call both of us. He was proud of you, though. He said you were so close. Like you were like,
I started well. And then I lost all confidence. I was like a backman who'd like got it in the back pocket, like bounced it down the field. And then as soon as I got inside the 50 arc, was like, I'm not really used to kicking goals.
I was just about to give a percentage number to say, oh, you got 90% of the way there. But then I backed away from it because I'm like, I don't know if that's wrong as well. And Adam's going to laugh at that as well. Yeah,
you got 90% of the way there. And then like there was 20% left that you didn't get.
So you put half a mil of peroxide, and they say that you only need to do it for like, you know, the front five teeth because no one's going to see the teeth on the side.
Don't like that attitude.
What?
I don't like separating my teeth from each other.
Or you like, think they should
again,
be,
this is part of your should propaganda, all be white. Isn't it? Well, that's what I'm saying. You're immediately making a value judgment that the white teeth, the ones who get to be like shown off, who get to be in leadership positions and control things, while the brown teeth behind the scenes are doing all the hard work. And so not I'm
Rosa.
Are
you saying I'm Rosa Parking my molars?
Oh, that's exactly what I'm saying.
Making them sit at the back of my mouth.
Yeah. You get back there. You chew the food and you don't get any time in the spotlight. I'm sorry. No, thank you.
Well, the only way to correct this injustice, Will, is to get the doctor to surgically rearrange my mouth so my molars
that's what you
are sitting
do.
Up if the you, front.
It's not enough to just not be racist. You've got to be anti-racist. And I think the only way you can prove that point is to have your entire – I mean – you get on some breakfast like TV shows. Like they'd have you on Sunrise if a former Channel 7 Home and Away star had rearranged all the teeth in his mouth as a protest against racism.
And written a song too. Not only that, but I'd written a song as well. The first dose, you're meant to like just do it for 15 minutes just to get used to it. And then it's meant to be 45 minutes a day for 2 weeks after that. So I put in what I thought was half a mil in each of the little tooth holders and then put the top thing in, the bottom thing in, and was going okay for about a minute. Then searing pain, awful searing pain, the kind of pain you'd feel if you'd put peroxide directly onto your gums where all the nerve endings are. Fucking excruciating. And the thing was
but that doesn't surprise me in any way. This is part of the reason I would never do it is I'm not taking my dentistry home. I'm uncomfortable enough with dentistry in the first place. The only thing that gets me through the dentistry is knowing that a competent professional is in charge of it and he's letting me suck on a whole bunch of laughing gas. Like, unless you're letting me go home with, like, you know, a couple of SodaStream bottles and just be like, have a couple of these before you whack your mouth guard in. No, thank you. That's your job, not my job.
Well, so because I think Jem has whitened her teeth in the same way before. And so I would like, after about 10 minutes, I'm like, is it meant to absolutely fucking burn? And she's like, no, I don't remember it being like that for me. And so I'm frantically reading the instructions while it's burning. I didn't think to take it out because I'm like, well, maybe this is just meant to be the way it is.
I can understand that with some applications of some things, right? Where you're like, okay, well, this is part of it. But if I get through this thing, then eventually it's going to feel okay.
Yeah.
But this is a mouth guard you can just out. So you could literally just take it out, pause for a moment, and if it is meant to feel like that, restart the process. Like it's not like taking it out would have in any way interrupted the process of whitening your teeth.
Will, the last 2 weeks has been a real insight into my own psychology. Like I've started going back into therapy again, so I'm getting back into that introspective state, and the teeth whitening process has opened like – a lot of doors, like made me question a lot of things because, all right, so the first dose fucked it up, clearly too much peroxide. And then from then on, I'm trying to kind of dose it. And when you put, because it's clear, when you put the mouth guard in, you got a
microdose.
Yeah, exactly. Got to microdose the peroxide. So you can sort of see where the peroxide's going as you're putting the mouth guard on. But I kept fucking it up and it kept getting to the gums and it would sting. Yeah. And again, rather than sort of like taking the guard out and rinsing my mouth out and maybe starting again or taking a
just
break. I was like, fuck you, Charlie. Fuck you. You fucked up. You wear this. This is on you, man.
Yeah, you only find out if you're doing it wrong while you continue to do it wrong.
Yeah. Like, and then I started thinking about, like, because
I mean, this
then
is sometimes, very, very Catholic of you is what I'm going to say.
Exactly.
This is so Catholic of you.
The last week's episode got me thinking about it. I'm like, oh, my God, I accept punishment and pain because I think that life,
yeah, you
deserve it. And yeah, life doesn't come without some suffering.
You're that dude from the Da Vinci Code whipping yourself on the back.
Whipping himself, flagellating. I'm that albino monk. My teeth are that albino monk just being flagellated. But it was funny because there was one night where I must have got the dosage like just right because I could see it, the peroxide, but it didn't quite reach my gum, so it wasn't hurting. And I sat there resenting the experience. I was like, this is fucking bullshit. Surely not doing anything.
Got it right.
Yeah, got it right. Because it didn't hurt. because it didn't hurt, I was suspicious about whether or not it was actually working. And to the point again where I started like down talking to myself, like, you fucking idiot, didn't put enough on. You should put some right on your gums now just so you feel something.
Yeah, but that's the equivalent of lifting too many weights. And then, like, going back to the appropriate amount of weights you're meant to be lifting and going, oh, it doesn't, like, this is not working because I can walk the next day. Right?
Yeah.
You know, just because you were getting it wrong in the first place doesn't mean you should resent getting it right. But, okay, so how many days have you been doing it for now?
So it's been 2 weeks.
How many days have you been doing it correctly? How many days did it take for you to get to the correct dosage?
I reckon the last week has been less painful. But here's the thing, is I like a bit of pain now. Mm-hmm. I just like a little hint. I don't like that excruciating, it's all over my gums. But unless I feel like a little bit of pain, I'm like, it's not working. I like pleasure with some pain.
Here's the best test, not whether I think your teeth are whiter, but can you tell a demonstrable difference between where you whiten versus where you're not whitening? So, like, if you looked at the teeth that are adjacent to each other in your mouth, would you be able to see that the one you've been whitening is whiter than the one? Like, are they ebonies and ivories, or are they still just ivories?
I haven't made that comparison yet. I still, it plays tricks with my mind. Some days I'll look at it and I'll go, oh, yeah, I can see a difference. And other days I'll be like, I don't know if it's even working. And then part of me is like, but surely it'll only whiten where the peroxide goes, and I'm not going all the way down. So am I going to have like a yellow, you know, around the sort of root of the tooth where it meets the gum. Yeah. And so I don't know. I haven't, and I think if I was going to check it against like the back teeth or the molars, I'd need like a fairly strong light, like a pen light. I'm not going to be able to stick an actual torch in my mouth to actually see.
A question for you. Are you sun smart? Yeah. Would you consider yourself to be a sun smart person? Do you tan in the summer? Like, does your face get like darker in the summer? Or does it stay a pretty consistent like shade?
Well, you can see I've still got the remnants of a tan there. So I do put on sunscreen, but I don't go out with a big hat and an umbrella, and I don't look like Marlon Brando in The Island of Dr. Moreau, just wrapped in bandages.
No, I would say that, like, from me knowing you, that during the summer, because you're outdoorsy as well, you know, you go for a run, that sort of thing. You know, even if you're wearing a hat or sunscreen in those situations, you're getting enough sun that, like, if you are a person whose skin changes color in those circumstances, that it happens. And you are one of those people, you tend to have a bit of like a home and away glow about you, you know, that sort of like Australian outdoor, like, and so do you worry?
I think it's called pre-cancer. It's pre-skin cancer.
Well, what I'm saying is, do you worry that in the summer months there's going to be too stark a contrast and your teeth will appear too
neon?
Like, you know, because, like, you know, when you see someone who's just got their teeth redone and they've gone like just way too white. Like,
in LA. It's the thing that throws me the most in LA is the false white, super white teeth, like the perfectly shaped aligned teeth.
Yeah.
And when they're talking to you, because they don't quite fit just right. Like, maybe it's, again, Adam Spencer's going to freak out. Maybe it's 3% off. But the way their lips are moving over the teeth, it completely throws me. But, yeah, I hate that kind of unnatural white tooth. So yes, there's an element of that, but there's also an element a bit like going to the gym where you start lifting weights. You're like, oh, I'm doing this now. I want to see how far I can go. I've got this much peroxide left in my dispenser. Should I just go for it? I mean, what happens? Like, how will they go transparent if I put too much peroxide in? Will I be like the Invisible Man, but just my teeth are invisible so you can see all the roots and like the nerves inside my teeth?
That's pretty amazing. That is actually, like, that would be a great little Twilight Zone episode or something.
The invisible,
right? Like,
teeth.
Because I think that, like, it's, that's creepy. Like, if everybody's face is just like normal, but their teeth are invisible and you can just see what's going on behind, that would be absolutely disconcerting. And you could see in a Black Mirror sense, like, everyone's whitening their teeth through vanity. Suddenly their teeth go completely invisible and, like, you know, here is the rest of the episode. So I think you're safe. And the reason that I would think you're safe is that you would not have been the first person to attempt this. So, like, the one thing, teeth whitening has been around for ages, and there's absolutely no doubt when you leave people to administer their own doses that at some stage people have, like, if there was a point you could take it, there are people dumber than you who don't, like, read instructions, like, whose guesstimate of what one, like, a 0.5 mil is way out compared to yours, and just whack the whole thing in and just go, I'm going to whiten them overnight. And we haven't heard a lot of reports of invisible teeth, you know what I mean? Like, and you would hear about that.
It's funny too, like, even, you're right, look, this has been market tested and they wouldn't release it to the public if it was, you know, going to turn your teeth invisible. But just from the sheer pain factor of it when it reaches your gums. Remember when, like, anal bleaching was, like, in the zeitgeist in the early 2000s? It was like everyone had a bit on anal bleaching.
I did.
Did you? So did you do any research on it? Like, do they put peroxide directly onto the sphincter or something? Is that how it's done? Because I can't imagine that would be
absolutely
a pleasurable experience.
Absolutely no research. It never even occurred to me to do research. I had enough information to work with for all the comedic purposes I needed to deal with. I imagine it's chemicals, right? How could it be anything but chemicals? I mean, it's got bleach in the description of it. So you don't think you'd put bleach in the description if there wasn't some sort of bleach involved in the process.
Do you want Mike to do it?
Oh yeah. I mean, Mike, could you please Google how does anal bleaching work and have a little read and then give us some information? That would be really fantastic.
While Mike is doing some research on that, there's an article that everyone sent in to us that they wanted us to talk about, which I'm sure you saw as well. And it's the chess robot grabs and breaks the finger of a seven-year-old opponent. You're across this story?
Only the headline, because it was sent to me by so many people. And I decided at the time, I was like, you know what, at some point we're going to explore this. Did not know it was necessarily going to be this week, but I imagined, I was like, you know, I'm going to wait for somebody else to tell me this story. So I hope that's what's about to happen now, Charlie. Oh, hang on. Well, before we get to that, Mike's on the line.
Oh, how could you have all this information on anal bleaching so quickly? Was the information already there?
Oh, no, I've just got the sentence from the first Google result for how does anal bleaching work, which I'll read out. So a popular method is using chemical peels or creams to break down melanin, which are the natural pigments in the skin. These products can also reduce the number of melanin-producing cells around your anus. So it's not only like lessening the amount of melanin, but it's also preventing down the cells that make more melanin. So it's
right. Can you just type in anal bleaching painful ? To see? I'd like to sort of know what the first-hand experience is, because I imagine it. Like to change the pigment of someone's skin. I mean, I think I've had a skin peel before, like from a, you know, just like a skincare specialist. But even that, I remember sort of stinging a little bit. It was like a chemical face peel.
It says anal bleaching may be mildly uncomfortable, but is unlikely to be painful.
is the uncomfortable bit just telling people that you had your anus bleached? I imagine that's where the discomfort comes from.
I mean, if I could walk away from an encounter where my anus was bleached and only feel mildly uncomfortable, then like that's a win, right?
Yeah.
It's mildly irritating.
Laser anal bleaching procedures may be more uncomfortable.
Oh, okay.
So the cream is less painful than laser.
Okay.
Can you imagine being some like medical technician? I don't know how long you have to study to get your degree, and you specialize in aiming a laser at someone's butthole.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of like playing Star Wars when you're growing up, right?
It's right. Just you just like, got to get it up the exhaust hole.
Exactly. Like
fire the laser at the exhaust port.
I mean, essentially, that's what Luke Skywalker was doing, right?
What Star Wars was? A giant metaphor for anal bleaching?
Somebody was watching Star Wars and invented anal bleaching. They were like, we can do this. We just got to use the Force. Pew, pew.
All right. Let's get back to this psychotic robot. Okay, so the article, this is from The Guardian. Chess robot grabs and breaks the finger of 7-year-old opponent. Moscow incident occurred because the child violated safety rules by taking his turn too quickly, an official says. Played by humans, chess is a game of strategic thinking, calm, concentration, and intellectual endeavor. Violence doesn't usually come into it. The same, it seems, can not always be said of machines. Oh, okay. So you're getting a real sense of where this journalist is approaching it from. Kind of like us. They're from the TOEFOP camp. Last week, according to Russian media outlets, a chess-playing robot, apparently unsettled by the quick responses of a 7-year-old boy, unceremoniously grabbed and broke his finger during a match at the Moscow Open. The robot broke the child's finger, Sergei Lazarev, president of Moscow's Chess Federation, told the TASS news agency after the incident, adding that the machine had played many previous exhibitions without upset. He then followed up with, "This, of course, is bad."
Yeah, good. Well, I'm glad that they at least knew that this was bad, because I would have thought this was one of the things you would really watch out for, is like if you're having a robot play chess against a child, children. You'd be like, our children are a bit unpredictable. Probably even chess genius children can be a bit impetuous, or, you know, just clumsy, you know, not fully coordinated yet. Like, we better make sure that our robot's not going to say, for example, rip their tiny delicate fingers off.
Like, even the cheapest, most like dirt poor, like carnival that rolls into town will have safety measures. Like, you don't often, I mean, I know it happens, but you don't often hear about like 7-year-olds having their fingers broken at their local carny rides. And this has been run by people who are generally on meth. So the fact that like this hoity-toity chess tournament didn't properly safety test the robots before they deployed them on children is staggering.
Like, how is it possible that the robot's ripping the child's – like, how is that even a thing that the robot is able to do? Like, I assume that – like, I mean, I assume the story will tell us more, but, like, I assume that the robot's mistaken the kid's hand or something for, like, a chess piece. Is that what's happened?
Well, we'll get it. So video of the July 19 incident published by the – and I'm sure it's not pronounced this. I'm sure it's Bazaar Telegram Channel, but it's B-A-Z-A, so I'm going to call it the Bazaar Telegram Channel. We're going to Australianize it.
Yeah, nice.
The video of the incident published by the Bazaar Telegram Channel shows the boy's finger being pinched by the robotic arm for several seconds before a woman followed by three men rush in to free him and usher him away. Sergei Smagin, vice president of the Russian Chess Federation – is that two Sergeys? Yeah. So Sergei Larivez and Sergei Smagin told Bazaar that the robot appeared to pounce after it took one of the boy's pieces. Rather than waiting for the machine to complete its move, the boy opted for a quick response, he said. There are certain safety rules, and the child apparently violated them. Oh, so we're going to
the kid's seven. Sorry. No. This is, I mean, very Russian, right? This is the kid's fault.
In Russia,
there were rules.
You do not violate the robot. The robot violates you.
We have your parents. You know, we've had you in this chess camp for 9 of your 7 years on this earth.
You think it's like Black Widow, that this chess player has been in some kind of from birth, raised to be a chess master.
Well, otherwise, what is the scenario in which, like, you're a parent, like, Iona's not this age yet, but, like, imagine she's 7 years old. Turns out she just has a remarkable capacity for chess, right? Like, she just, you get her a chessboard, or, she has something at home, she's playing checkers, she's really good. You're like, well, maybe we should get her a chessboard. Like, she just has, like, a real, you know, she's a prodigy. You know, you're like, well, we'll encourage this. This is, like, you know, her interest. And, like, you know, you get Adam Spencer involved, he'd be wrapped. He comes in like your Mr. Miyagi, right? Like, you know, to coach her, to train her, you know, moves you out of the way because you're dead weight now. You're just carrying the bags and stuff. Like, he's in charge of her career. But, like, do you think that if he said, okay, I've entered you in this big tournament, like, but one of the things is she's going to be playing against, like, a robot, And look, here's a set of rules so she doesn't get her fingers ripped off. How would you feel about that?
Well, look, if he honestly, like, if Spence came to me and said, "Hey, look, you know, there's this tournament happening," I'm a terrible parent. I would automatically assume that all safety protocols and measures had been taken and that my child would be completely safe. I wouldn't ask any questions. I'm like, "Oh, there's a robot there. How cute. Is it like the one from Perfect Match? Is it Dexter? Is she playing against Dexter? Can I get a photo of Dexter?" That would be where my brain goes.
That'll be the problem. You'll be like most devastated, not only at a broken finger, but the fact that you got like several really good like Instagram shots with the robot earlier. So it's going to be really embarrassing.
Okay, so the child violated the safety rules.
Yes.
When he made his move, he did not realize he first had to wait, Smargin said. "This is an extremely rare case, the first I can recall," he added. All right, like that seems to me like a real simple, at the start of the tournament, you just say, "Hey, few housekeeping rules." Just wait before you make your move because the robot has to complete its function. Amazing that they didn't think that they needed to explain that to anyone who's taking part in the tournament.
Oh, but not just like not explain it, because I imagine they explained it, but like if someone's seven and they're playing against the robot, like I assume they don't have, they're all, not all playing against robots constantly, right? Like, so can't you just have like an adult supervising, like just there constantly watching this kid's hands as a safety precaution, just in case a seven-year-old who's engaged in a game of chess against a artificial intelligence robot maybe forgets for a second that he's not meant to put his hand in. I mean, I blame the kid, of course, but...
Yeah, of course. Idiot. Lazarev has a different account. He says the child had made a move, and after that we need him to give time for the robot to answer, but the boy hurried and the robot grabbed him. Either way, he said, the suppliers were going to... have to think again. Okay, so that's their response. I mean, this is Russia, because any other developed nation, there would be lawsuit. Like, or maybe apart from China, there would be a lawsuit. Like, this kid is going to whatever fancy university he wants to go to. You know, he's got a deposit for a house. In Russia, it's like bad luck, broken fingers, shut your mouth.
I mean, and like, you only need like two fingers to play chess, right? Like, you can still lose a few more to the robot, and still, as long as you can like have like a thumb and like a finger to like, you know, and to be honest, like you could, you know, use your mouth. Like even if like the robot broke all your fingers, you could still use your mouth to like, you know, move the pieces around.
Okay. So Baza named the boy as Christopher and said that he was one of the 30 best chess players. Or should that be past tense? He was one of the 30 best chess players in the Russian capital in the under-9s category. Uh-huh. People rushed to help and pulled out the finger of the young player, but the fracture could not be avoided, Baza said.
Yeah.
Gives a new meaning to pull your finger out, doesn't it?
It does. And also a different meaning to pull my finger as well. So, yeah. Look, so he hasn't snapped the finger off. Like the robot's,
I think what's happened is
grabbed,
it's a pincer.
Yeah. And fractured it because of like how, okay. So still painful.
This is the equivalent of you taking your kid to like a factory, an automated factory, like where they make tin cans or they pack foods or whatever. And you've just said to your kid, just stand at that conveyor belt. I'm sure things will be fine.
Yeah. But explained earlier that you shouldn't put your hand in things, but then like a row of chocolates are coming along and the kid's like, oh, chocolates.
Well, I've got to be honest. I'd probably have a broken finger as well. I wouldn't think twice before nabbing one of those. Lazarev told Taz that Christopher, whose finger was put in a plaster cast, did not seem overly traumatized by the attack. The child played the very next day.
Oh, well, that's fine.
Finished the tournament and volunteers to help record the moves, he said.
Okay.
His parents said. His parents, however, have reportedly contacted the public prosecutor's office. Mm-hmm. We will communicate, figure it out, and try and help in any way we can, he said. He said, while pressing the button that summons the KGB on his desk. Smargin told the RRA Novosti the incident was a coincidence and the robot was absolutely safe.
Yeah.
You can't say that after it's just broken a child's finger. Yeah.
It's like
you can't say
a coincidence.
You could say it is usually. You could say it's usually safe. It's normally safe. You can't say it's
this
absolutely
is the first
safe
time. But you can't say it's a coincidence. Like, the child just, like, wasn't coincidentally playing a game of chess with an AI robot. Like, it was in a chess tournament.
The machine, which can play multiple matches at a time and had reportedly already played three on that day when it encountered Christopher, so, was unique.
Why is that part of this story? Come on, guys. It had already played three games that day. Oh, well, fair enough then. Who wouldn't break a kid's finger four games into a chess tournament in one day?
In fact, next year, let's make sure that we have plenty of kids for fingers for breaking. Because after three games, this robot's going to be real tired.
It's the only way. We've made a deal with the robot. It's already smarter than us, but it's agreed to pretend that it isn't if it can occasionally break a small child's finger.
Okay, so it already played three on the day at Encounter Christopher. It was unique. It has performed at many opens. Apparently, children need to be warned. It happens.
Yeah. Well,
he's speaking out both sides of his mouth here, though. Yeah. It's like, well, on one hand, it's absolutely safe. On the other hand, this happens and children should be warned.
Children should be warned, children. But also, children don't need to be warned. Like, parents need to be warned. Adults need to be warned. And then the adults, yes, need to then pass that on to their children. But this idea that, like, you just, like, cut out the middleman and go straight to the kids. like, no.
Yeah. This is the third person featured in this story called Sergei. They've all the men. I mean, look, you know, I don't believe in stereotyping anyone, especially in like a whole country of people, but are all of you called Sergei? Because it seems like you are.
I mean, do you think that, I mean, it's just a very common name in Russia, obviously, or is this one of those situations where none of them want to be identified? Like, they're giving quotes to the press, right? So they've all just gone, what's your name? Sergei. What's your name? Well, Sergei.
I would agree with you, except they're giving surnames as well. So a Russian grandmaster, Sergei Karjakin. Karjakin. I know this guy's been there. I think you're right, Will. I think this guy's just, he's just fucking made it up. Sergei Karjakin. I watched The Fast and the Furious last night.
Hang on. Let's go back and re-examine the two previous like surnames that we've had to see if they're also Bart Simpson style. Like, so who are the other?
Sergei Lazarev. Sergei Smagin, S-M-A-G-I-N, Smagin or Smagin?
Yeah, both of those sound like they could be made up names to me.
Yeah. And then Sergei Karjakin.
Yeah.
Or Karjakin. No, it's definitely I think it's Karjakin. Yeah. Sergei Karjakin said the incident was no doubt due to some kind of software or something.
Yeah, or something.
Adding, this has never happened before. There are such accidents. I wish the boy good health.
Yeah, good. But also,
Christopher may have.
That's like, okay. Well, all right. Look, I mean, again, I think they could be telling the truth. Like, this may be the first incident, but the idea that this wasn't something that they could expect to happen is the thing that is stunning to me.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess the question is, like, this is obviously like an exhibition thing, like when you play Deep Blue. I imagine Deep Blue doesn't have a robotic arm, but it doesn't strike me that anyone's contrite enough to go, you know what, maybe we should get rid of the robot arm. Let's just stick with Deep Blue and someone has to make the pieces for him.
Why do we need the robot arm? Like,
To break fingers. For finger breaking.
I'm here to win games of chess and break fingers.
Born to do two things, checkmate and break fingers. That's what the computer says. Because I'm a computer. I'm AI. I'm here to do two things, man. Checkmate and break fingers. That's how it starts trash talking the kids, the computer.
Here to do two things, checkmate and break fingers.
We don't need the robot arm. You've identified the absolute issue, which is you can still have the AI technology, but why don't we just always still have a human involved where the computer makes the move and then the human who is next to them, keep a human employed as well, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, we don't need to cut out the middleman, particularly when it's so dangerous for children.
Christopher may have been lucky. While robots are becoming more and more sophisticated, with most modern models capable of not just interacting but actively cooperating with humans, most simple repeat the same basic actions: grab, move, put down. and neither know nor care if people get in the way. Okay, yeah. Thanks for the explanation. Right.
Excellent.
According to one 2015 study, one person is killed each year by an industrial robot in the US alone.
Yeah.
Indeed, according to the US Occupational Safety Administration, most occupational accidents since 2000 involve robots and have been fatalities. Sorry, I misread that. Most occupational accidents since 2000 involving robots have been fatalities.
Mm.
Robert Williams, widely considered the first, was crushed to death by the arm of a one-ton robot on Ford's Michigan production line in 1979. In 2015, a robot killed a 22-year-old contractor at one of Volkswagen's German plants, grabbing him and crushing him against a metal plate.
Hmm.
I didn't know that so many people were getting killed by robots, did you?
Just one a year, which just feels like I'm practicing, right? Like just getting enough information every year to just work out how to do it really. Because they know that you can't, like one a year, no one's paying much attention, right?
It's more than one a year. Robots used in medical surgery were also held responsible for the deaths of 144 people between 2008 and 2013.
Yeah, well, it's easy
Mate,
to cover
they're getting
up.
It. They're getting their reps up.
Well, that's
definitely.
That's easy. That's like that, you know, the Dr. Death, the person, the guy who was like the serial killer who was killing like people in hospitals, the doctor, because he, you know, you can actually go, oh, no, they were like, you know, they were old, they were sick, they were whatever. Like, I'm not actually a serial killer. This is what the robots have been doing. They're practicing where we're not going to suspect anything.
More recently, Elaine Herzberg was killed by Uber's autonomous car when it hit the 49-year-old at 40 kilometers an hour in Arizona in 2018. Generally, however, human error or lack of human understanding of robotic processes is the most frequent cause. And then there's this final sentence. It pays to be careful around robots, even if they're only playing chess.
Yes, firstly,
PSA to finish the article.
Good message at the end. But secondly, this idea where they always say, oh, well, you know, there's always human error. You're like, yeah, but that's who's going to be in charge of the robots until the robots are in charge of us is humans. Like, I absolutely agree that like one of the things that I'm most terrified about is like human error. Like, you know, we are... sometimes incapable of understanding what it is we develop until we develop it. And then we see the ramifications of the choices that we've made. Like, you know, you see it with the internet. Like if people think this couldn't happen with AI and robots and stuff, you just got to look at what happened with the internet. Like 30 years ago, the world was just a completely different world to what it is now. And then this thing came along that like, that we all just were like, oh, you know, fuck that old world. There's a new world now.
Let's jump headfirst
like
into this. Let's connect the world's information instantaneously. Yeah. Let's give each other just like tiny little glowing boxes with the world's information. That's going to help our mental health.
You know what?
That'll just make
what would happen
better.
If we just put all this peroxide in the mouth guard and whacked it in our face at the same time? Let's see what happens. And now we've all got invisible teeth.
Short episode this week, Will, because we have things to do. So let's get to the mailbag. If you want to send us some mail, you can. You go to tofop.com. There's a little contact form. You can pick which podcast you want to get in touch with. And while you're there, check out some of our other great podcasts. I did a Fofop with Michael Chamberlain this week. So Michael Chamberlain back on the pod after a long time, which is a fun chat. We talked a little bit about the Neighbours finale, which I did not see, was not invited to participate in. Jay Duncan, the pyromaniac firefighter from season 2008, whenever that was not invited back. But did you see any of the Neighbours finale?
No. And I look, I saw what was reported in the news of the people who made cameos.
I feel like that's what I wanted to see.
Yeah. But to be honest, I'm not sure that I ever, because when I grew up in the country, like we didn't have Neighbours. So that whole era of the
literally, you didn't have neighbours. No, you didn't have neighbours.
Yeah, we were anti-neighbours in general. We didn't understand it. I'm like, people in the country won't understand this show. They're neighbours.
Yeah, even the lyrics of the theme song must have been baffling to you. Neighbours, everybody needs good neighbours for a little understanding. What the fuck are they talking about? I look out my window; it's just paddocks.
I've only met three people in the last 4 years. What is this? This is like a hate crime for people living in my area. That idea of like everybody like jammed into one court was my dad's worst nightmare. So no, we never watched it. So even that whole Kylie and Jason, like the the most famous era of Neighbours. I understand what it was in Australian pop culture, but it was never a huge part of my viewing experience. And I don't have that affection. Like, I don't even know. Like, I saw that Guy Pearce's character and Annie Jones's character, like, they were kind of a romance that never, like, ended up together, and there was some sort of reunion storyline. And I was like, I don't know who they were. I don't know. I don't get this. I have no, like, connection to this story. And I did hear, though, that Guy Pearce, like, you talk about everybody coming back, you know, like, some people obviously on a Zoom call, some people like in a real cameo that was clearly filmed nowhere near anybody else who was involved in the production. But from what I heard from the commentary was that Guy Pearce came back and worked, which just is so Guy Pearce. He's like, no, I'm just not going to do a cameo. Give me a storyline. I'm going to be back in Neighbours, like being a Neighbours actor.
He drove from his place in Geelong and just drove to South Vermont in Melbourne's, the suburbs of Melbourne, and was on Neighbours.
Yeah.
That is right. It's a very Guy Pearce story. So you can check that out. And also Two Guys, One Cup, that's our AFL adjacent podcast. We're getting towards final time. Will and I, both our teams are vying. I mean, I haven't checked the score, but I think Richmond are getting pumped. So I think it's going to come down to the Bulldogs or the Saints for that final spot. So a bit of extra spice.
If you are inclined
to listen to that.
And Charlie's in a good mood, and I'm in a terrible mood about football. So that's basically.
I mean, we'll talk about it. We'll talk about it tomorrow when we record. But fuck, the first quarter, I was like, the Dogs are on, mate. No, Bevo's bottom boys.
I thought that too. Anyway, but that's a tomorrow conversation. But that conversation.
Well, you know, we're playing them next week at the same venue.
So they're really, really good, man. It's terrifying. Yeah, but anyway, we'll talk about that tomorrow.
Horrifying.
Can I just say quickly, this Sunday night at the Athenaeum, so I will be doing the final ever performance of Willogical. Thank you to everybody who came out and saw it in Sydney. Some of the most fun shows I've ever had doing stand-up. And so thank you very much for coming to see that. The final ever show of it, Sunday, August the 7th. I'd love to fill out the Athenaeum. Justin Hamilton is coming down to do support. We're going to make it a big, fun show to say goodbye to this show so I can start fucking working on next issue.
And so the cycle, the cosmic dance continues. This is from Rachel, Hi Will and Charlie. Charlie, just wanted to say that your Five content has reignited my love for the boy band. Mm-hmm. I live in the UK and I actually saw them live when I was 6 years old, crying emoji. I also had to let you know that Keep On Moving played on UK's Love Island last night. I'd like to think that's Tofop's influence. Thanks for all the laughs, boys. Are you getting those messages from people that their algorithm is sending them Five content? Like, the people who listen to our show are getting sent like tour information for Five?
I mean, I think that's the algorithm working properly, isn't it? Because I've got to be honest with you. I bet there's a few people who are listening to this, who've been listening to this, that might consider going to see those shows.
Five at the Factory.
And that's why the computers don't need to break our fucking fingers, Charlie. They're already fucking controlling everything.
They just capture our hearts.
Moving us around like chess pieces.
Well, that's why we're going to keep on moving, Will, so that robot doesn't break your finger.
Oh, you know what? We should recruit Five. This is how we get Jay back. We say, we've got to fucking rise up against the machines. This is actually a good storyline for Jay, right?
Oh, yeah. I like this. Right? Yeah, man.
We've got to get him out of high. And we needed an anthem, like, for us to be able to avoid the machines. Oh, fuck me, by the way. We don't have the time to talk about it today. It's a whole episode by itself. But I have been watching the television show Hunted, and I have so many thoughts. So that's a next time. Like, I don't know if you want to watch some of it or not, but it is, I have so many thoughts.
Where do I find it? What's it on?
Play or Paramount Plus.
All right. I'll have to download one of those things. I was interested. I saw when they were launching it, because it did come again. It felt like algorithmically influenced off the back of us discussing what you would do if you had to hide from all technology.
Mate, it is. It is the most dystopian, horrible, like, one step away from Running Man piece of propaganda I've ever seen in my entire life. Oh. And I cannot stop watching.
I have to watch it now.
Like I have to. I'm taking notes. Like I'm getting rid of shit. I'm clearing out things. I'm like fucking thinking.
Are
about
you?
Fucking nice. Like the anyway, it's a whole episode, absolutely. But watch some of it. It is fucked up.
Okay. All right, great. Let's finish on this letter from Rebecca. Hey, to Colin Fopp, I'm very behind on the podcast. I'm sorry if this is late news, but Charlie's obsession with The Rock, I think that's our obsession with The Rock.
Yeah, absolutely.
Makes me honor bound to write in and tell you about Southland Tales. It is unequivocally both The Rock's best acting work and also the most batshit movie that's ever been made. It's really worth a watch. Thanks for the pod. You keep me laughing so I can keep coding. Love you guys, Becca. Funny coincidence, last time I had Guy Davis on Fofop, we talked about the career of Richard Kelly, who was the director of Donnie Darko and the director of Southland Tales. And I highlighted Southland Tales as being a perfect example of someone being given too much too soon. Like Donnie Darko was this cult hit. A studio gave him a blank check. He got a bunch of big stars in and it's a fucking mess. Like there's been this movement lately to kind of reevaluate Southland Tales. Is it actually, was it way ahead of its time? No, it's not. It's a complete fucking mess. It's a bizarre film. Look, I think, don't know if it's The Rock's best role. He's very charismatic in it. And you can, he's essentially the lead. And this was back when he was Scorpion King. So it was a big gamble. Richard Kelly was obviously smart enough to know this guy has something. But I don't know if it is The Rock's best role. Like he's done so many good roles. I actually think that The Rock, he's in that sequel to Get Shorty where he plays a gay Samoan cowboy or country and western singer, and he's amazing in that. Like it's so out of his normal wheelhouse of action movies. He's just playing playing comedy and singing, and he's great at both.
Yeah, look, the Rock's greatest role is The Rock, I
being
believe.
The Rock.
Yeah, being The Rock. I don't think he can do any of that stuff anymore. Like we talk about those things being like at the start of his acting career. I think there was a moment where he could have. I think he's now just, I can't see that he could actually ever, you can only see him as The Rock. He looks like a cartoon that you've cast in a real movie.
Yeah. I mean, there's this Instagram account that does like side-by-side comparisons of like, bodybuilders and stuff like that to show like transformations as celebrities. And there's one of The Rock in, I guess it would have been like early 2000s and what he looks like now. And he's somehow bigger and he somehow looks better and bigger now than he did when he was in his 20s. I guess that's steroids.
Heaps bigger. I mean, I don't know what,
but
the
not
Rock
just
is
that,
thinking,
but he's,
but
but he's cut as well. Like I know I had a friend who worked on that Hercules movie. And he just spoke glowingly about The Rock, said that he was the loveliest guy and very generous and, you know, accommodated everyone. But he also said, you cannot stop staring at him because it's like a physical, it's like your brain can't take in what you're seeing. He's so huge, but then really cut. Like it's like, it's very unusual.
It's more because it's like he's worked on every bit of it. Like there's parts of my body that, like sometimes
I've never seen it. There's muscles in your body you've never moved.
Right. And like sometimes if I've got a lump or something, you're like, is that always been there? Because like I have so little regard for my body that like I don't even know, like I don't even haven't checked out most of it. Like I just haven't read the manual. Whereas like The Rock, you're like, he's really like got an eye for detail. Like every bit of it is like, I remember
he
wrote about the fact that he had, liposuction. Because he like no matter boobs. How much he worked out, he had like on his pecs, he couldn't like get the, you know, what he wanted to have there. Like so, he's clearly thought it through.
But that's
what
lot
it looks
of
like.
Work.
You're like you've thought this through.
I mean, it really does. Like it makes you think. Like how can he sustain that? Like you see videos of Sly and Arnie now, and they still look pretty good. Like I saw a video of Sylvester Stallone, 75, and he's just like shorts, and he's jacked and stuff, but. Like I understand he's taken roids and HGH and stuff, but he still has to go and lift things and do repetitions to get that shit out. Like that's a lot of time where but he's productive as well. This is the crazy thing is like The Rock's obviously going to the gym twice a day, but he's still fucking producing, acting, being the head of starting a new fucking football league like the XFL. Have you been following that? He's going to be the richest, most famous person in the entire world soon.
Yeah. Yeah. So, like, he's good at scheduling his day.
Or not sleeping.
Oh, man.
All right. Well, let's leave it there. Right. That's TOEFOP this week. Thank you for listening. If you want to support us, the best way to do that still is through the Patreon. Lots of great bonus content up there. Brand new bonus episode went up last week. Obviously, all of James Fosdyke's comic strips and a heap of back catalogue stuff. So go check it out. Patreon.com/TOEFOP. But for now, I'm Charlie Clawson.
I'm Will Anderson.
This podcast is a TOEFOP production.
Head to TOEFOP.com for more
cool things for cool people.